percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
Happy Valentine's Week. Why celebrate just one day? And there's plenty of chocolate to go around. And yes, that little meme that went around, well, it wasn't a meme, actually it was a story, that was saying that chocolate was going to be gone, the plant was extinct and would be out by 2050. Not so fast. Not so fast. Apparently that was, you know, massive panic. So they've come back and said, no, what they're doing now is to prevent that from happening. They are concerned because of the climate change that the plants are vulnerable. The same thing with the coffee. Coffee is also supposedly in that same category. However, they're giving us a reprieve on chocolate, so Valentine's is safe for a few more decades. The flu virus, absolutely astounding, the numbers on that. But there are now some indications that there might be some reprieve, at least in the future. UV, this is a special type of UV light. They're saying it is possible that this could just completely take out the pandemic before it starts, and it doesn't harm humans. It's a specific type, far ultraviolet C light, and it kills airborne flu viruses and doesn't harm the human tissues. Okay, so don't be careful before you start trying to monopolize the market on this, because at this point they're still wanting to do some more tests, but it could be that they could set it up in a hospital, set it up in airports, those kinds of things to help nip this thing in the bud before it gets out of hand. So that one was really fantastic. There's another thing, that a pill that they're saying kills the flu virus in 24 hours. Now, this is a new pill. It's a futurism is where I found that one. But it could be 2019 before it gets U.S. approval. But they do have some reports, studies saying that it will knock it out within 24 hours. And right now, I think the fastest thing is within 3 days. Anyway, lot of things like that in the news. And since we're staying on the Valentine, I'll just go back to that for just a minute. Here's a little frog named Romeo who desperately needs help. He's supposed to be the very last of his species. However, they think maybe it's just he's the last one they have found, and he might be able to have some assistance if they start very vigorously looking for his mate. So he has a dating profile. He's looking for a match. And this is apparently he's been looking for quite some time without success, 9 years. And this is an idea to hopefully help Romeo find his match. They're going to fund a group of biologists, a trip to go down and track down in the hopes of finding a mate for Romeo. So, Juliet, Juliet, wherefore art thou? About $15,000 later. That, I thought, was, you know, it's sad but cute. And hopefully Romeo will get Juliet. They're trying to do everything they can. Do you know why dogs know how, you know, they get kind of anxious and they know when you're leaving? They know, or something has changed around the house. They can smell. They smell when you're leaving. And so if you know that that's going to be a problem, this is so astounding, just the kinds of things that dogs are sensitive to. And the time of day can smell different. The seasons, and I know that, you know, the fall is one of my favorite times of year when the leaves are all decomposing and all that. So seasonal temperatures are a big deal. But the dogs, and like they say, they smell in stereo. So part of it is that you trigger when you're planning to leave. They are cluing into that. And if you want to help them, you just, you know, say, hey, yeah, you're right. I'm going to leave and I'm going to be back. Somebody posted on Facebook, she went out to get the mail. And at the door, with their little noses pressed against the window, were an assortment of pets, two or three dogs and a cat. And they were all crammed up against the window looking to see where mom went and wondering. They looked a little anxious if she was indeed coming back. How do dogs choose their favorite person? Oh, you know this already. You have to be nice to them. Affection. affection. You can give them treats till the cows come home, and yeah, that's fine. That's temporary. But if you really want to win a dog's heart, you do the affection, and you say, hey, you're my buddy. And so you can compete now with your partner. Who's going to get the dog to stay with them? And that's not fair. That's not fair. The one thing that I did look up, I just happened to see this come up again. This UFO thing isn't going away. And I was looking to see if there are more, given that we just did the interview with Love and Saucers, David Huggins, giving more attention to this. And their sightings are up since the first of the year. And one of the things that was a highlight about the Phoenix Lights UFO, they had a call to the air traffic control center from an unidentified pilot who reported the sighting, and he was flying along with his son. And they finally, this was so fun when BBC was doing the interviews for a show, Kurt Russell said, oh, by the way, that was me, and identified the license plate for the pilot and all that, and said, yeah, I don't know what I saw, but I did see it. So things like that, we're getting more visibility. I did post some stuff on the blog, continuing to post the things that I think there are just a whole lot more information coming about people who have had sightings, what the specific sightings look like. And yeah, not everyone is going to see a UFO. There's something out there right now that's like a disco satellite that they are saying, you know, this might be the cause of a few sightings as long as it's up there. I think 9 months or so it's supposed to be going around wreaking havoc with UFO sightings everywhere. So anyway, just things like that. I've got a guest. I'm going to take it in a different direction because this time of year, people have done their New Year's resolutions. They want to change things. They want to jumpstart things. They might be considering, you know, big or small changes. It doesn't make any difference. Change is sometimes one of those things that no matter what it is, it's just a challenge to get it into some kind of a routine. So Patty Fivett, the author of The Eagle's View, Five Steps to Modern Mysticism, is my guest. Patty, you're on the line right now, and I hope I didn't throw you with UFOs.
No, it takes a lot to throw me with something like that.
Okay, good. Okay, you've been to Egypt and the pyramids, so maybe that would even be more fantastic.
Oh, it was.
Okay. We're gonna get into that in a minute, but just before we get into the break, the mysticism, I think that still has an enigma, a mystery about it. Just a real quick overview of mysticism, just to define it before we get started.
I'd be glad to. You know, when we think of mysticism, I think we have been trained by maybe our religious teachings, or perhaps even in school, or just by the general thought of the population around us, that it's a little woo-woo and it's way out there. Well, I tagged the word modern onto mysticism, and I firmly believe that we do not have to be secluded and recite mantras or read prayer books or holy books continually, you know, to live a mystical life. I understand modern mysticism as the ordinary life and doing ordinary things is a direct participation with the divine in whatever way you understand the divine. And it's also recognition that of this profound change that that the mysticism has upon one's life. And it's a continuous endeavor to bring the experience of the holy into everyday events, not just prayer time, not just that wonderful, oh my, that wonderful feeling that you see when you see a sunset or the stars at night or walk through the woods, but bring the same feeling into the everyday events, maybe vacuuming in your workplace, washing dishes, taking a walk, interacting with a friend. And you do that through intuition by allowing your insight to blossom, because we each have an innate instinct. And that's what I think modern mysticism is. And it makes you were talking about change, Wendy, and it makes a profound difference in the way you understand life and you experience life, and it makes a profound difference in the life all around you.
I want to get into, after the break, into the eagle and the symbolism and the meaning and the relevance of that, because that's the eagle's view, Five Steps to Modern Mysticism. Again, my guest coming up in the next break, we're going to talk about exactly what that is and how that happens and what it can mean on so many levels when you're making these extraordinary, I think, upgrades to your present. Next, my guest, Patty Fivett on Wendy's Coffee House. KCMO Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffee House. Thank you for joining us. There's so much going on right now, and there's a lot of chaos. In a lot of ways, that is so incredibly important to happen because it gets the flotsam and jetsam and all the stuff that shouldn't be there out in the open and all the stuff that needs to be in some way reconciled, integrated, transmuted, and transcended on some level out so you can work with it. And I think that, in a way, deals with mysticism because all of a sudden, the world becomes, in just a moment, a completely different place to be. And Patty Fivett has been there. Five Steps to Modern Mysticism, The Eagle's View. I wanted to get into the background. Patty, I didn't give you a chance to set up how you came to this moment in your life, because this was a transition for you as well.
It was a transition, and this book, The Eagle's View, was actually information that I needed to learn for myself, and it was a way of living and an understanding of who I was on this planet. But it didn't. It wasn't something I learned in a book. It was experiential. I had to learn the experience by going through life and being completely aware. Years ago, life fell apart. And there was a one-sentence prayer that I said that changed my life around, and I meant it with every cell in my body. I said on my knees in the middle of a thunderstorm, and I write about this in When Life Cried Out, my first book. I got on my knees in the middle of a thunderstorm, and the lightning and thunder was just absolutely horrendous. And the prayer was, whatever is standing in the way of me living a spiritual life, may it fall from me. Oh, my goodness, if anybody ever wants to do that prayer, please add the words with light, love, and ease.
With a caveat.
Okay.
Yes, yes, oh. It was not an easy journey. Marriage fell apart. In fact, it exploded. The friendships I thought that I had just faded away, just like they were never there. I ended up having to move to a community that was not the one I was familiar with, and I ended up traveling. I was not a traveler. I was suffering from agoraphobia at the time. So I learned that as long as I was going to be afraid of the world, I might as well see some of it while I'm
you just get your fear in front of you, yeah.
I'm the bravest little scaredy cat you've ever met. And so I found a traveling companion who had worked as a travel agent. So I got to go to these places that my intuition was calling me to go to. And I've crawled through the Great Pyramid. I have traveled in the temples of Egypt and had some profound experiences there. And in the Middle Nile area, I have been to Auschwitz. I ended up learning how to kayak in the South Pacific, believe it or not, in the Cook Islands. Mm-hmm. And I had all these places, and everywhere I went, Wendy, I came back with new knowledge or a new piece of myself. And I never decided I was going to go to one of these things until I would dream about it, or it would come in threes to me, or my intuition was just expanding at that time to the point that I had to get training to learn how to deal with it. Everything I had put away in childhood had come back when I was in my late 40s, early 50s, and I didn't know what to do with it. So there it was. I was learning how to use my intuition. I finally believe that we all have it in some form. And that's how it started with me. And to get to the back to the book, The Eagle's View, the symbolism of the eagle was profound for me because I kept dreaming about eagles. And I had a series of eagle dreams, and I mentioned these dreams in detail in the second book, Making of a Mystic. But the eagles, at first, all through my travels, these eagle dreams came. The first dream repeated forever. I thought, will I sleep tonight without having this eagle? And the eagle was hatched and gangly and was growing its feathers like baby birds do. But it happened to be living in a pen full of chickens. There's nothing wrong with chickens, but the eagle didn't belong there. Mm-hmm. And so that was the dream. And then one day the dream shifted as I was shifting. And the dream went from being in the chicken pen to doing a walkabout, trying to figure out who the eagle was and what it was. And though, I won't say those were pleasant dreams, because there was the search. Where is it? And I would wake up like that, not frantic, but completely undone. And then one day the dream shifted, and these didn't go as long. The eagle got to the edge of a cliff. It had never flown. It didn't know how to fly. That's personal freedom. That's what that was about. But it knew it couldn't go back the way it had come, because that was chicken life, and the eagle didn't belong in chicken life. It belonged in eagle life. And so what was it going to do? And so that decision was that dream. And then one day and one night, I dreamed the eagle said, well, I'm going to give it a try. And it jumped, and it was free-falling. I would wake up literally screaming with those dreams, because I was the eagle and it was tumbling and it wasn't. And mm-hmm. It always woke up before the eagle splatted onto the ground, blew it.
Yeah.
And those were not pleasant. But one day, another day, as I grew, the dream switched. And the eagle heard the voice of spirit. Spread your wings. I've got you. Oh, my, I almost want to cry talking about it right now, because that was so profound, that one message. Spread your wings, I have you, you know. And so the eagle spread its wings, and the winds would carry it, and it was sort of flying. Then one day, I dreamed it only once, and it was only necessary that I dreamed it once. One day, the eagle started flying. It was in control of its own life, and I was seeing the world from the eyes of the eagle in the dream.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I called the book The Eagle's View, that's what I'm talking about. And Native Americans used to say the eagle was a message from the Great Spirit, and perhaps they still say that. I don't know. But so the eagle, it was like higher self, God, spirit, whatever you want to call it, was saying to me, you live your life as a spiritual adventure, not living your life as a human seeking the divine, but living your life as you are already connected to the divine. You have just forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it meant for me. And that's what the book is about. It's a guide. I don't tell anybody how to do anything, but the book is a guide. There are 5 steps, and these are the steps. Awareness, identity, expression. I call it spiritual artistry. In other words, how will expression happen? And spiritual artistry includes intuition, manifestation, and oneness. And then the 5th one, which is very pertinent for today and every day, as you had said earlier, Wendy, love. What is real love? And how many times do we try to substitute something for real love? And that's what the book is about. It's a guidebook.
Well, and there are several chapters. Love, I think, is so appropriate because we're in that time of year, Valentine's. What does that mean to people? Well, it's more than a chocolate heart and flowers. It's an ongoing process that happens with every breath, every day, every moment. It is something that you invest in, not only everything you see, but everything that you are, too. We're going to take a quick break. I want to come back. Beliefs alter experience or affect experience. And your beliefs that you have started out with as a kid sometimes are not in line with reality. They can be a little distorted given the background and what you were programmed with as a child and in this, you know, social environment. Whatever was affecting you and imprinted on you at that time might not have been your stuff. So coming back with that and how that can shift as you, like Patty, find yourself at a turning point and say, I want to change this. And again, what did you say? Ask for it to be a gentle change? What was that? Be careful.
Light, love, and ease.
And you might want to do it while it's calm outside, not in the middle of a thunderstorm. Yeah, the thunder.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think the thunder beings add a little embellishment just so you would say, hey, we heard you here. Coming up, we're going to talk more about the mystic, the modern mystic, and how that works for everybody. KCMO Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffee House. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio, my guest, Patty Fivett. Modern mysticism. How does it work? What do you do? Who are you? Who am I? How does reality work? All of this. We were talking about love, too. You choose in the book, there's that book from Sonia Choquette, the once you choose to love yourself and align with your spirit, life aligns with you. And that's after you get the hurdle of, okay, I'm changing things. Okay, sometimes you have to tear it all down to put it back together because what was there wasn't necessarily meant to be long term. It was meant to get you from point A to point B. And like the eagle, I have watched, I can't remember what kind, if it was a condor or what kind of eagle, but as they build their nests way up on the cliffs, and the eagles, the babies, the chicks have to step out of that nest into air, and you watch them as they tumble and they land on the cliff, you think, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, they're going to be just in a billion pieces. They're like, and then they get up, you know, kind of crumpled a little bit, and it goes from there. And I saw on the internet a guy who rescued a condor, and the condor was freed, and the condor came back to thank him. And I'll post that on the Wendy's Coffee House. But that was reminding me of all these things, that endings aren't exactly the no more action. It's, again, a transition. And I wanted to get back with your transition into mysticism and how that went and the beliefs that made a difference with your experience. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I had so many beliefs and what I thought were truths that were not actual reality. They were imposed reality upon me by parents, by teachers, by the world. You know, the things I had picked up that were just false belief. One of them was that my father, I loved my father dearly, but he was a product of his age and his environment and the consciousness of the times. And that said that women could not be in business, women did not have the wherewithal for business activities, and if a woman really wanted to be have conveniences in her life and have a smooth life, then she needs to marry well, whatever that meant.
Yeah, well is relative,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, I never got that. So whatever marry well meant, you know, and that a woman didn't have the smarts, you know, to do mm-hmm. these things and be out into the world. And my mother was taught by her mother the art of fascination, which was popular, and it became popular in the 1920s for women. In other words, you had to be fascinating to a man in whatever way. I won't go into that.
Yeah, yeah.
And you had to dress well, and you had to very politely strut your stuff, you know, in order for them to
yes.
to be noticeable, and that was the worthwhile of your life. And I can't think of anything that is more incorrect.
You said you were very good at one point. You could arrange flowers to perfection. And I think setting a table was also an asset.
Yes.
At one time, those things were, the etiquette, those were mandatory.
They really, really were. Yeah, I was in, I was put in a junior garden club at age, how old are you in the sixth grade? In the sixth grade, however old you are. And what's that, 11? And I was put in a junior garden club so I would know how to arrange flowers by the time I got married. You know?
Okay.
This was important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And see, I love to arrange flowers. It's fun. I love to grow them, but I like to get my hands in the soil and be covered in all of it and you know, make it a real experience. You know, I don't look like June Cleaver when I'm arranging the flowers.
No, the pearls and heels.
Table. And yeah. Nor is it necessary. But never once was I told that it's innate to my being that divine love and I are one. Never mm-hmm. was I told. I had to come up with that myself. And never was I told that if you understand yourself as a being created by the divine, in whatever way you understand the divine, that the love is innate, and I call that divine love in the book. Some people have called it agape, but this divine love is innate to your being, and knowing that is a matter of waking up to it. It's there. And once you do that, once you wake up to the fact that it's okay to be you just the way you are, and you are born in love and for love and with love, and you are love, but once you wake up to that, then your family love, brotherly love, passion, and family love is not necessarily, in my way of thinking, it's not necessarily genetic. Sometimes your best friend is like a sister. And brotherly love or eros, which is passion of any kind. It could be passion for arranging flowers. It could be passion for cooking. It could be passion for another person. But all those increase exponentially once you realize that you already are divine love, and it's not something you seek through family, brotherly love, or passion. It's already there with you, and once you realize that, the whole world becomes a different place. You can even use a word earlier in the show, it's transcend. I love that word, and that's the foremost word that has come to me in the next book that I want to write that I've only had 3 pages into so far, which is Advanced Mystical Experiences. But the word transcend came very, very early. You can transcend the need to be angry at someone who is angry at you.
Yeah.
You can transcend the need to move to a lower state with your eating, just to make you feel better. You can emotionally feel better.
Yeah.
You can transcend so many things once you get the fact that love is already there.
That's a tough, that's a hurdle.
It is a hurdle. It really is a tough one. The first 4 things in the book I won't say they were easy, but they came readily, and with a little work and a little awareness, they came readily, and I knew what I was going to say. When I got to the 5th one, and I knew I had to write love as the 5th one, I knew that. That was an intuitive thing,
mm-hmm.
and I could not publish the book without it. But I will tell you, it turned me upside down and inside out.
Yeah.
Because I'd look at the computer screen, and I'd try to write the words, and all I would see is a blank page.
You've improved since then.
I have. I finally had to open up to God, the universe, and the angels and everything else out there and say, okay, I'm going to learn it. Let's go.
And that, I think, you know, giving voice to what that means is powerful because there's so much to it that is beyond just a relationship with somebody. Somebody's saying, she had a reading, and she said, you know, I keep getting this card that says you're going to have a new love and a new romance, and she says, I don't want a relationship. And I said, why does it have to be specifically a relationship? You can't be in love with life or in love with a project or in love with an idea or a creation. Love is so much more than just that, you know, physical connection with one other person. That is what brought us here, I think, is this love of being. And okay, now I look at the clock. We have to take a break. Okay, fine. We're gonna pick that up because I want to go back into, you had some profound experiences, and this is the spiritual artistry, basically how you're getting in touch with the intuition. And there's a crystal that you were drawn to, and maybe that would help explain this next phase. We're coming back. Again, my guest is the author of The Eagle's View, 5 Steps to Modern Mysticism. And Modern Mysticism is the website. We're going to come back in just a few here on KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House. Yeah, it's the Valentine month. I figured, why not? We did a week, but it's Valentine month. I don't know if the frog has found love yet. It's the internet. Anything can happen. I think they just want to take the expedition. My guest, Patty Fivett. She's the modern mystic. And the book is called The Eagle's View, 5 Steps to Modern Mysticism. And we were focusing on love, I think, basically, that's the bottom line. That's what it's all about. But I wanted to get into some of these moments, these transcendent moments that happened that will, you know, that probably you're going to go into more with the next book. But there was one that you walked into a store and you had this spark, this magnetism. And that is something that when you get more in touch with your intuition and out of the logical thing of I need to go shopping for this, this, and this, and you say, what is it that's calling me? And this is how I think it relates to that experience. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yes, I do know what you're talking about.
I thought so.
I open up to those experiences. I don't go for them. And I don't say I'm going to go ahead. I don't make them happen. I don't think you can make them happen. But you can allow yourself to open up to them, and they will happen, mm-hmm. especially if you have an intention for growth or a higher spiritual connection. You know, show me what I need to know, and then open up and know it will happen, and you will have one of those aha moments, which is what I like to call them. Those aha moments change you, and you are not the same. But I walked in, I was at the island of Hawaii. I had gone on a healing retreat, and I had had some profound experiences at the retreat, and it was a lovely retreat. And we were swimming with dolphins and that type of thing, and it was nice. But we had like 4 hours, my first husband and I had 4 hours or so before we got on the plane, and so we wandered around the island. And we ended up in a little community, and he went one way and I went the other, which was the story of our relationship.
There you go, in a nutshell.
Yeah, yeah. And enough of that. I won't go into that because it's not worthy of this program.
But, it was transition.
But anyway, yeah. And so it just said Rock Shop on the or something like that. It was a very simple name on this. And I thought, well, why not? Because at that point, I was experimenting with feeling the energy of rocks. And I got where I could close my eyes and discern the difference in the energy of a rock. You think of rock as not a living, breathing thing, but they are. I don't want to say alive, but they do have different energies and different physical properties. And so I thought, well, this will be fun. I can go, you know, play around. And that was my thought. But so I walked in the rock shop. I have never seen such in my life. Now, in North Carolina, where I live, you can go to rock shops in, you know, in the Appalachian Mountains and this type of thing. But I have never seen anything like this place. And the energy of it took me by surprise. I think every rock in there had a profound energy. And so I stood just at the doorway. I didn't even see the proprietor and the lady that ran the shop. I didn't even see her. I was so focused into the rocks, and they were everywhere. They were on tables, and they were in little niches around the walls. And I thought, what is there for me? What is here for me? You know, what can, yes. You know, because I was all profound. Where can I have an experience? You know, show me what I need to know and this type of thing. And as I was standing at the door, you know, saying that, you know, calming down and saying that, and I said, this is profound, but show me what is profound for me here. In the back right-hand corner in a little niche, in the back of the little niche with several other crystals, it was, how do I say it? It was like a magnet that was drawing me to it. And, oh, my stars, and I'm walking to whatever this is back there, and it's almost like it had my name on it. It was pulling me. It was the thing. I don't know another way to describe it, but I had to get back there to it, and I made a beeline to this thing, and I felt without touching it or putting my hands over it, this one crystal, it was tall, maybe 12 inches tall, and I was aware, that's the word I'm looking for, I was aware that energy was spiraling upward out of the top of it. And I don't even have to touch and feel with my hands. I know it's there. And that was a different type of intuition for me than knowing, because I was using feel, and which is different from touch. I was using feeling and auditory intuition, you know, hearing a thought or hearing a feeling. But so the knowing was totally different for me, and I see this thing, and it is so profound to me, and I reach out and I put my hand to it and bring it back and to it and bring it back. And then this voice from behind the counter starts laughing, and she said, if something is calling to you that much, you need it. You know? And I hadn't even seen her, and I started laughing. And said, I didn't even know you were there. She said, oh, I've been watching.
Yes.
No, you didn't. So I've got it, and it's sitting here right behind me. I do not write or do anything unless this crystal is here, and every now and then I'll take it out and wash it off with pure water and give it a sun bath, you know, and revitalize it just like the rest of us have to do. But I'll bring it back in, and it's just as profound as it can be. But these type of experiences, you don't have to be an intuition master to have them. They can be quite subtle. They can come in threes. You know, just what you do have to do is be aware. Be very, very aware.
We are running out of time, so I want to give you a chance, because that's the thing about this. This happened on a daily basis. It happened step by step, day by day, hour by hour. It wasn't an overnight, all of a sudden, here I am, a mystic. These were experiences, like the things you experienced when you went to Auschwitz, the things you experienced in Egypt, and when you're talking about, you know, kayaking in the Cook Islands, and then there at Hawaii. These are profound, but they continue. And so as it does, you continue going about your normal daily routine and then expanding as this happens. So when people come to you, you're a coach, basically. Is that a good way?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And modern mysticism.
It's not something I actively seek, but it just comes my way.
Okay, so modernmysticism.com, that's the website if you're listening. But so if somebody, you know, basically you do group sessions, you also do individual sessions. And do you Skype as well?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
And so basically, it's pretty easy to connect with you if anybody...
Yes, it is. You can connect to me through the Facebook website, Facebook page, I'm sorry. It's Modern Mysticism, and there's several Modern Mysticism Facebook pages, but you will see post four times a week, and it's just... nice little feel-good things that are more along the mystical line, and I attach a picture with them. And but you can find me through my website, modernmysticism.com. There's a way to email me there.
Okay.
And that's how you can find me.
Okay. And basically, since this is a love show or a love theme, that time of year when love seems to be the big focus, it's basically an act of loving yourself and saying, I love myself enough to check this out or connect or allow myself to step outside the little box that I have established for myself just to see what maybe I don't need to be afraid of anymore. When you talked about being agoraphobic, it's like, oh, that's how perfect. That's so perfect. Getting out of the box.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly right. You are all you need. It's there for you. It's a matter of trusting your heart and opening your heart. Do not be afraid to open your heart to new experiences, to new ideas. You can always go back to the way you were, but I promise you, once you open your heart to the divine connection that you already have, you're not going to want to go back to the way it was, because it's going to be so profound and so beautiful, even in teeny tiny ways. The small little experiences can have the biggest impact. While we've been talking, this hummingbird has been... And I'm on the second floor, and this hummingbird has been coming to the window and flying off, and coming to the window and flying off, and there's nothing red anywhere around here.
We got to go. We got to go. So that would be the message of joy, of joy.
Thank you.
See ya. Till next time. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. Wendy's Coffee House.